And good afternoon, everyone. I'm Stephen Patrick Clare, and you are listening to The Book Club. Tuesday afternoon to one and all. It's Stephen Patrick Clare. You're listening to The Book Club here, heard every Tuesday from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax, CKDU.ca around the world. We have an impeccable show for you today. Maybe the most exciting show of the year. We have Julie Wilson with us today. She is a.k.a. The Book Madame. And Kimberly Walsh, formerly of CBC Books, but soon to be with Nimbus Publishing and Vagrant Press, will be here. We'll be chatting with them in just a couple minutes. We've got news, weather, sports, our weekly contest and giveaway, as well. We'll be reaching into the mailbag, so stick around. As usual, Jeff Beck, the wonderful six-string stylings of Mr. Jeff Beck, leading us in with Scatterbrain. And Suzanne actually wrote in over the course of the week asking me, what's that song you play at the beginning of every show? And I say, well, it is the aptly titled Scatterbrain by Jeff Beck by 1975's classic fusion record, Blow by Blow. But enough of Blow by Blow, enough of Jeff Beck. Here we are. It is Tuesday afternoon, 1:30 p.m. Atlantic Standard Time here in Halifax in the fourth floor, on the fourth floor of the Dalhousie Student Union building on the Dalhousie University campus. This is the Book Club, heard every Tuesday from 1:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Atlantic Standard Time on CKDU 88.1 FM in the Halifax Regional Municipality, CKDU.ca, around the world. Oh boy, we've got some excitement on the go here, and I'm stoked, and I've been looking forward to this all week, because it's a chance to get the hell out of my house and get out to real life and talk to real human beings, and no better human beings, perhaps, to talk to on the Book Club than our guest today, Julie Wilson, a.k.a. Book Madame. Is it Madame or Madam?
It's actually Madam.
It is, isn't it? It's only in Quebec that it's Madame.
Yeah, I don't know. I like it.
It is
the damn, madam, the book madam. I don't know. I just think it rolls off the tongue.
It does very much so. Yeah. And in fact, we're going to talk about you and what you do coming up. And as well, we also have in studio a repeat visitor. This is your third visit. That is unprecedented here on the Book Club.
What did she get?
What kind of prize do you get? Kimberly Walsh is here, formerly from CBC Books. But now with Nimbus Publishing Vagrant Press here in Halifax.
Yes.
Wow, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to have you guys
Welcome
here.
To publishing, Kimberly.
Why do you have to say it so ominously?
Interesting time into that world, but...
exciting time.
It is an exciting time.
Yeah.
It's going through a lot of changes, and we'll talk about that kind of stuff today. We do have some business, however, to take care of, if you guys don't mind me just going through the weather first.
Sure,
please do.
And please feel free to comment at will about the weather.
Well, I am shaken to the bone presently.
It is cold.
Yes.
It is cold. However, you are from Toronto, and we talked about this before we went on air, and it's even colder probably in Toronto.
Yes.
That's what it is. You know what it is? It's Canada. And it's February. So stop your bitching. So tell it to everybody. And you know why everybody talks about the weather? I read this recently. This is true. It's because it's something we can all have an opinion on.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little like the government. The government sucks. It's easy to say, you know, but it's such a great icebreaker. No pun intended this time. Okay, today, Environment Canada says it's cloudy with sunny periods and 60% chance of flurries, a high of -3. Tonight, cloudy periods, 30% chance of flurries, a low of -8. So it's cold, but it's manageable. Tomorrow, mix of sun and cloud. You know, whenever Environment Canada doesn't know, they just said it's a mix.
Yeah.
Of sun and cloud. Mm. It's just so much easier that, you know, because then you can have one or the other.
Isn't Environment Canada, though, the ones where they actually really narrate the weather every once in a while?
They do. They have an audio recorded version, which you can actually dial up. And a lot of the local radio stations, the info stations or whatever, do use that. You know, and it's this hilarious Radiohead OK Computer type voice. Little spooky. Tomorrow, mix of sun and cloud and high of -4. Thursday, sunny. Friday, snow or rain. Ugh. Saturday, flurries. So we're back to the crap as of the weekend approaches. Can we do our bestsellers? Let's do
okay,
a little
let's go for
and,
it.
And let's
I don't have any.
And maybe
I haven't written any lately.
Here are the top five hardcover fiction and nonfiction books in Canada for this week. We'll do the Nova Scotia list at the end from our good friends at Chapters in Bears Lake. And the children's list is from Woozles Independent Bookstore.
Oh, Woozles.
In Halifax. They are great folks, aren't they?
Yes.
That is one of the coolest bookstores just to walk into.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're 6 years old again. So here's the top fiction book in Canada. And we'll get you guys to comment on each. Just pipe in at any point if you feel like it. Number one is Room by Emma Donoghue.
Anybody right.
Read it? Anybody? No?
I have not yet. I have it. My understanding from readers that there's something that happens about partway through and then the book becomes something entirely different.
Mm.
And my understanding is the feedback from people, they either like that switch or they're not so fond of it.
Yeah. Mm.
So, but I am a huge fan of Emma Donoghue. So
yes, quite a writer. Absolutely. Alan Bradley has a new one out. It's called A Red Herring Without Mustard. Fans of Alan Bradley? Do you guys read Alan Bradley?
No. Actually, I don't know that I'm familiar.
I'm not at all.
He wrote a series of... that's Alan Jackson, young.
Oh.
And I wouldn't want to read anything he's written, that's for sure. But Alan Bradley, a pseudo-children's writer. These are kind of sort of fictional, fantasy-esque. I think sort of a more playful Harry Potter kind of thing and stuff. A lot of hype on it. Not a fan, got to admit it. But hey, you know, I've spoken to Alan, really nice guy. The book's got a lot of attention. Number three, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Like, how long has this been on the frigging?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Comments?
I'm not a fan of that genre, so I have no comment.
I'm not a tremendous fan of the writing itself. Mm-hmm. I will confess.
Okay. Have you seen the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Dear Lord, violent.
Yeah, it is a violent movie.
Good adaptation, though.
Well, there was two. I believe there was a Swedish version.
Yes, there was.
Or Scandinavian or Swedish. And
Swedish.
Then Swedish. And then there was a North American Hollywood-esque.
That one is coming. It's coming out, right? It hasn't been released in the theaters yet.
So. Because I think one has a lot of white-on-white titles.
Okay.
So I lost half the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Number four.
That's
Left
a nice tattoo.
Left Neglected by Lisa Genova. Any? I've never.
God,
heard
do I work in publishing?
I know.
I'm not familiar with this either.
No. Okay. We'll just leave that.
Are there
one.
Publishers associated?
Not on this particular list, but we could probably track that down. Number five, Fall of Giants by Ken Follett.
Oh sure.
You know, male boy literature. I guess.
No, I like his historical fiction. Yeah, I have that on my to be read list. Because I loved Pillars of the Earth.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I just downloaded the app last night.
Okay, the app, there we go. Yeah. We're going to talk about that today for sure. Top five nonfiction books in Canada. Number one, The Tiger, John Vaillant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about it. I have a copy sitting at home with about 400 other books that have yet to be read.
It's supposed to be tremendous. Mm.
Is it?
Yeah, I have a copy. I haven't read it.
How legit are these, you know, top bestseller lists? I mean, you know, when you talk about popularity of books, does that give any credence to the worth of the book or the value of the book?
That they're on the list?
Yeah. That so many people are buying them. Like, are people that, you know, informed, intelligent, are they that right in making these purchases?
Good question.
Talk to me at the end of this answer.
I think sometimes it's hype, right? Like, we were having this conversation on route to the studio, and sometimes it is just hype. Like, you know, what makes an Oprah book so popular. It's Oprah's stamp of approval, right? But
right.
does that mean The Secret is, you know, a fantastically written book?
Right.
Or, you know, to bring it back to what you were saying about whether, you know, I don't know if it's a popular opinion, but I really do believe that just because people buy books that they haven't, in fact, read them. You know, I think there's a big difference between a reader and a collector.
Right.
And I actually probably consider myself a collector before a reader. But like the weather, if you hear about something enough, there's a part of you that wants to kind of be a part of it,
right,
or a part of the conversation.
Right.
So maybe you haven't read The Tiger now, but you're feeling good about the fact that you know that there's so many other people out there who have read it, that when you do get around to reading it, that you won't be alone in your company.
Right.
That, you know, you'll encounter someone who can talk about this stuff.
I think
with you.
An important distinction. You know? However, then you could bring up the case for Justin Bieber as well, just because so many people are talking about it that, you know, that there might be some worth.
It's really, really too bad people can't see my hair. It's a new look.
Number two on the nonfiction
bangs.
12 steps to a compassionate life.
It only takes 7.
I know Karen Armstrong is quite reputed in the sort of quote unquote self-help world. You know, she's put out a series of books, and I'm wondering if the 12 steps to a compassionate life, are those based on the 12 steps of like AA and that kind of thing?
They aren't, I think we should be allowed to draw that conclusion.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, conquering alcoholism and compassionate life are probably equated in some regard. You know? Interesting. Okay.
Personally, I'm a fan of the Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz. So Karen might want to rewrite that a little.
Scale it down.
Yeah. App.
Patriot Hearts by John Furlong, number 3. No idea. No, never heard of it. Number 4, I read this, Life by Keith Richards.
Oh, yeah.
A must read.
Yes.
I'll tell you why. It's written like he talks.
Yeah.
And that, which means every second word is 4 letters.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really is. It's an excellent read if you're, even if you're not a fan of the Stones, but if you're a fan of celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, or drugs. Number 5, A History of the World in 100 Objects, Neil McGregor. Interesting title. Probably an early front runner for title of the year.
Yeah.
For sure. You guys hear of this book at all?
No.
Nope.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Nova Scotia. This is a cool title. Nova Scotia Place Names by David Scott. That's a very interesting title.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some pretty funny names here. You know, Ecom Secom.
Muscadabit.
Muscadabit.
Yeah. I didn't know how to pronounce that one when I first got here.
Muscadabit. Yes. Stewiac. Yeah, there's a few of them. Number 2, Lexicon Volume 12. What the hell's a lexicon book? Please somebody tell me. Because this lady is on, Teresa Williams, is on this bestseller list for Nova Scotia every week for the past 2 years with these lexicon books. Never seen one, don't know anything about them. What the hell's a lexicon?
Don't know.
Any ideas, Julie?
Well, I mean, what's the title again?
It's called Lexicon Volume 12.
Volume 12?
Yes, which means there were 11 books before this one.
Is this sort of like a phraseology sort of thing? Like, I think about the lexicon, the sort of like, you know, commonalities of phrasing that people share.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it could be.
I don't know.
Could be.
Is it illustrated?
You know what? Doesn't say. I'm going to Google it while we're doing music in a few minutes. And
that's my tip. I think illustrated is the next pop-up.
Pop-up's good. Pop-up's
Volume
good.
13 should be
right.
A pop-up.
Scratch and sniff. Number 3, Sweet Suburb by Sharon and Wayne Ingalls. I know they're popular writers. Don't know anything about Sweet Suburb, though, but it's, to me, that's an oxymoron, having grown up in the burbs of Montreal. Number 4, Underground Nova Scotia, a very dark book by Paul Erickson.
You know that one?
I don't know it.
Underground.
I have a copy of it. It's actually all the tunnels that go underneath and all the
that stuff.
Archaeologist stuff and like that.
There was that zine. Do you remember that? That online zine?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gosh. I've totally forgotten what his name was. Died, unfortunately, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was fascinated by that stuff.
Interesting.
Psychogeographical walks. I love that stuff.
And number 5, John Boileau's Halifax and the Royal Canadian Navy, which is actually a fantastic reading. John
is
former military, and he's fascinating to talk to. One thing, Julie, we will tell you about Atlantic Canada, and Kim will testify to this, is that we are just fascinated with our heritage and history down here. There's, you know, we glorify the past when the future dries up. Is that the line from the song. So here's our top five children's books from Woozles. Have you been to Woozles yet, Julie?
No, but you know what? I didn't even think about it. I should have tried to schedule some time in.
I think if you're escorting our friend from Toronto here, it should be a mandatory stop.
Yeah. Even our way back home.
Maybe.
It's a cute spot.
Woozles, we're coming for you.
Yeah, and Dowell, John's bookstore down on...
Yeah.
This is Dave Bedini, whenever he comes into town.
Yeah.
Solo for, you know, a reading or a concert or whatever, or both. This is mandatory stop for him.
Yeah.
Claims it's the best bookstore in the entire country.
Nice.
And I am inclined to agree. And the folks down there, Phil and John and Amelia, are unbelievably helpful. And it's funny, you can come in with the most obscure title.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they will know.
Yeah.
Exactly where to get it. Take them 10 seconds to go, put the ladder up, pull it off, no matter what it is or where it is. So our number one children's books, How to Catch a Star. Great title for a children's book. Mm-hmm. Number two, Each Peach Pear Plum by Janet and Alan Alberg. That's Each Peach Pear Plum. Say that 10 times. Number three, interesting choice, The Hockey Sweater, Roch Carrier.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
When you think about kids' books in Canada, that's got to be...
Way up there, yeah.
Way up there, along with, you know, stuff by Sherry Fitch and so forth.
Yeah.
Number four, Savvy by Ingrid Law. No idea. Number five, speaking of Sherry Fitch, Sleeping Dragons All Around, which she put out, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Which is still on the bestseller list, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's testament to the power of Sherry. Do you know Sherry, Julie?
I don't know her. But she's top of mind for some reason, and I don't know what it is. Has she shown up on Twitter?
She's all over the place. Twitter, Facebook, everything. Yeah, she's just discovered Facebook recently.
I think it's Facebook.
And
I
she's
think
gone she, out of her mind. Sherry, if you're listening, tone it down a little, sweetie.
I think a friendship request.
Yes, that's right.
If you were mentoring it at Nimbus, you probably would have, Diane would have mentioned her.
She blonde.
She is. Very blonde. Very blonde.
In
hair color only.
Okay.
Because she is a riot to talk to because she can go. We had her over for dinner one night and I don't think we got a word in edgewise.
She's seeing someone right now. Hello.
Sherry, you're awesome. We love you. Okay, so that's our bestsellers. Quickly, the events. Today is 22nd, is it not? We only have three events coming up over the next little while that we can talk about. Bruce Devaney will read from his new book, African Chronicles, a memoir at the Keshen Goodman Library in Halifax at 7 p.m. tonight as part of the library's African Heritage Program. I think the library does a great job for African Heritage Month.
Yeah.
They have David Woods, they've had Shante Grant, they've had a variety of George Eliot Clark coined Africadian authors that have come in to do events and stuff. So they've done a great job. Michael Crummy. Galore and River Thieves and that kind of fame. He's actually going to be the St. Mary's University writer in residence for 1 week, starting February 28th to March whatever. Mm-hmm. He will actually be reading next Tuesday from his latest novel, Galore, in the private dining room at the Loyola Building on Gorsebrook in Halifax. That's at 7 p.m. Don't know the details, but if you contact St. Mary's, they will tell you.
He's also a poet with Brick Books. I'll put that out there, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he's a fantastic
poet. So someone is in the
crowd,
they should shout out for one of those as well.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. I'd love to. I think, you know, we're going to try and swing him in here next Tuesday. I know we've got another author coming in as well next Tuesday. So maybe someone who's got a brand new book. Just her name off the top of my head, but we'll get to it after. Let's talk about our website of the week here. It is you.
Yes.
So we're getting
cutting
through all the news after 15 minutes of chit chat and stuff. Book Madame and Associates, and the website address is Book Madame or Book Madame at bookmadam.posterous.
Oh dear.
posterous.com.
You can just go to bookmadam.com and it will redirect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Bookmadam.com, all one word. And it's right here, I'm reading right off the website here. Who is Book Madame? Okay.
Me.
That's right. And this is the blurb underneath. It says, "The Cool Hunters of Publishing, Book Madame and Associates, is a collective of publishing and media professionals who love bright ideas and have been known to have a few of their own. Our goal is simple, to point to smart, savvy projects and people. Also expect inspiration, critiques, news items, and the odd kitten video." The associates are as follows: Aaron Balser, Nick Beauchart, Sean Cranberry, Stacey May Fowles. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yeah, you got it.
Ashley Gardner, Megan McDonald, Jill Murray, Chad Pelly, our good friend out of Newfoundland.
Chad rocks.
And Monique Trottier. And, of course, our other guest today, Kimberly Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about if we can, start off Book Madame, because you do have some news for us that there is now a second at the head table.
Yeah, first of all, all the associates are fantastic. Kimberly has sort of shown up, over the past year in a really unique way. And when I knew that she was leaving CBC, I said, it'd be really great if we could sort of partner with one another on something. And of course, the something was right there in front of us.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things that I really love about Kimberly is that we both sort of feel the same way, that just because we're really active and sort of like live in the online world, that, personal connections are really important. And so a number of the associates and a number of our readers had said, we'd love to see you kind of move away from this free hosting into something where you can start to actually monetize, the site, where you can start getting paid for, all of the content, and maybe just looks a little prettier. And so Kimberly's like, hey, there's a Porter seat sale. And I thought, this is what friendship is for. This is what networking is all about. And so I hopped on a flight to come down here, and I asked Kimberly on bended knee if she would be my partner in Book Madam.
Wow.
So we've been spending a couple of bottles of wine.
Yes.
Last night, talking about what this might look like.
Yeah.
And she's techie to my sort of like artsy-fartsy, but she's incredibly business-minded. And, I've always been the sort of person who's like, how can I pay everybody else before I pay myself? And
Right. She's
like, there's a way that we can organize this material and start getting paid now.
Yeah.
Right.
And frankly, give the associates their due.
Yeah.
Because they're incredible, incredible generous spirits. They're very, very bright. There's a rabble-rouser in each and every one of them.
Absolutely.
They stir it up, but what I love about them most is they always stay in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of controversy this past week with some copyright legislation, and Jill Murray and Sean Cranberry in particular, they just would not back down in the comments. I think we're over 80 deep now.
Yeah.
They bring a level of emotional maturity to every conversation. And I want to work with someone in a professional capacity so that people like that can be rewarded for, frankly, bringing one heck of a lot of traffic to the site.
Well, yeah. I think, there's a very good point that you bring up right on the website and the mandate, and that's, bright ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion is about ideas, as opposed to events or other people or mm-hmm. whatnot. People mm-hmm. or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that is essential. I mean, we need to keep maintain, the conversations about ideas, that these things need to be brought to the table. And, of course, that's something that was a big part of your mandate with CBC Book Club.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a good fit.
It's a fantastic fit.
What do you think you're going to bring to the project, Kimberly? Why do you want to be a part of this?
Oh, my goodness. It's I think it is the bright ideas, and it's the bright minds behind the associates. It would have been really difficult, I think, just for one of us to do the site, but we have, a handful of people who mm-hmm. are constantly bringing really fantastic ideas to the table, and it's a diversity too. So you've got authors, people in publishing, people who, are in media, and just different ideas come to the table all the time. And I think each of us have our own way of coming to an idea as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then being able to present it to the public and engage them in the conversation.
Yeah.
I get the impression, going through the website, and it's bookmarked at home, and it has been for quite some time, is that that's one of the things, is that you really are looking to engage people, to involve them and stuff.
Yeah.
And that probably is more important, I'm thinking, today than ever before.
Yeah.
Well, especially in publishing, we're kind of screwed in publishing, because we tell these really, really great stories, but Kimberly and I were talking about it on the way over. You're buying something sight unseen, so you don't really know what a book is until you actually invest in it. And there's no going back and saying, these jeans don't fit, and returning them to the store.
Right.
You invest, and it's a part of you. But it's difficult, because we're surrounded constantly by all sorts of inspiration and great content, but you know, selling, it's really, really difficult. And one of the other things I really love so much about the associates is they're not afraid to just keep coming up with ideas or responding or saying, I think it was Ashley Gardner was one of the first associates to sort of like go outside of publishing and say, I mean, Sean certainly talks a lot about the correlations between the music industry and the parallels, but Ashley pointed to a collective in Toronto of independently owned coffee shops and how they started sharing a coffee card. So just sort of staying within that indie culture, you would be rewarded eventually if you bought, I don't know how many cups of coffee it was. It could be at any one of these vendors.
Right.
And, you know, you would be rewarded, not just for going back to one over and over and over again. And that sort of thing, you know, and she just simply asked the question, could indie bookstores do that?
Or bookstores in general, because, I mean, there was news this week that Borders has declared bankruptcy, you know, and I mean, this was a major chain at one point on par with Chapters and To-Go, Amazon, et cetera.
Yep.
But, I mean, we're starting to see the majors be impacted by primarily the internet and the accessibility of literature via the internet and e-readers and so forth.
And that's definitely what's been driving the conversation on the site, I think. It's, you know, how do we, you know, people are talking about the death of the book and all this, you know, hyperbole, but it's, there are ways of changing it. There are ways of, you know, coming up with ideas that it's not going to save the industry. It's going to, you know, just change the industry.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's even value in putting the ideas out so that we can all agree, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there's, I feel that freedom also exists amongst the associates. That,
yeah.
You know, we can throw something, like, it really is throwing the spaghetti against the wall and see, you know, you see what sticks. Most of it's going to fall.
Yep.
You know, and I like that sort of, we were talking about it a little bit too, it's like, it's sort of like a drawing board sort of idea, or it feels as if we're kind of like doing spec work. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about, we love to actually think about is, could we actually become that drawing board? Mm-hmm. You know, we all of us have, you know, really unique skill sets, unique voices. Is there a way that we could say, hey, is there an author out there who wants to do XYZ? Mm-hmm. We don't know what it looks like, but if you come on board with us, as long as we can present it transparently as a tutorial, you get, you know, some publicity. We all learn together, and, you know, it won't be a colossal flop because you'll be working with good and dedicated people.
Yeah.
But this notion that, you know, I often say that you could give 25 people a punchline, they'll all tell a different joke.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think there needs to be any fear in worrying that we're going to put something out there on the site and then one day someone's going to come along and grab it and run with it and get rich off of it.
Right.
Because we've already determined we can't get rich off of publishing.
So it really is a question of adapting, is what you're saying, adapting to the change and then finding that fit.
Yeah. But using another muscle, right?
Right.
I mean, I think that yeah, it's just using another muscle. I mean, I don't know. Like, I should probably start, you know, brushing my teeth with my left hand, and we'll see what happens one day.
Right.
You know,
I've done that.
More crosswords, have you?
I get half a whitening.
That's, you know, what? I used to play. I played basketball in high school, and I've determined that I can mirror with my left hand everything my right hand is doing. But if my left hand has to go it alone, has no clue what it's doing. And in basketball they called me the great ape because you can't see it, but my arm would just swing. And of course, you know, defense would just come in and take the ball away and be like, what just happened? Like, I wasn't guarding myself.
And that has ramifications for the book industry, I might add.
I will find a connection.
Do you you've both got e-readers?
No,
I got a couple.
You got a couple.
I got a Kobo, I got a Kindle, and then I will say my preference though is the apps that I'm using on my iPad.
Right.
I just like the swish. I like the pagey, turny. It's very simple.
Do you still read physical books?
Oh gosh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Kim, is there a reason you don't have any readers? Is that by choice, or is it just poverty like me?
I am waiting for the next generation of the iPad to come out.
Ah.
I'm not I don't buy first generation Apple products.
Oh. Ooh, we could get some hate mail for that. Right at, but the iPad itself is a fantastic machine. I agree.
I adore it.
It's quite something. I mean, it's multi-purpose. It's that beautiful space between a laptop and an iPod.
I mean, I love it. Flash doesn't work very well on it, which
HTML5 is supposed to be replacing all of that sort of stuff. So. Good. People just need to get on board.
That feels weird that there's content that's being withheld.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
And do you do a lot of reading on it?
A fair bit.
Yeah.
A fair bit. Imagine. You know what I do? It's some publicists have started sending me galleys as PDFs. And I don't mind that. I don't mind that. You know, I don't want to have, not that books are clutter, but if I'm reading it because I'm thinking about, if there's a way that we can use it on the site, or if I'm going to be doing an author interview or something like that, I'd much rather that we try and run, say, a contest or something like that. So if you're going to pay for that shipping, well, then if I've enjoyed the book anyhow, maybe you could save yourself some money and, send it to someone else.
Yeah.
Right.
But, the one problem that I have with reading on an e-reader, and the comfort level is fine. There's no strain on the eyes. The swooshing, like the turning of the page, really does mimic, the turning of a page in a book. I don't know where I'm in the book at any point. Mm. If you're like me, I get into bed and I'm a little sleepy and I've got to be up the next day. I gauge how far I have to go to the end of the chapter, and that determines, whether or not I'm going to read or go to sleep. If I have, a meeting, I want to know how long I have, and I can't do that.
Yeah.
I know someone out there is thinking, yes, you can, because it says you're on page, whatever. But I eyeball, how quickly I can read something based on actually holding the book in front of me and the thickness of it. Where am I at?
I agree.
Or even just to be able to say, wow, the author's only got 30 pages to wrap this up. I don't see how they're going to do that. That's part of the enjoyment of reading.
And, and the other side of that as well is that I collect bookmarks.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't do that with an e-reader. And I told Ken the story. Sony sent me an e-reader about a year and a bit ago for an endorsement for whatever reason, out of the blue. And I dropped mine. I had it for 5 days. I think I was telling you the story. I dropped it. And I called the company and I said, I broke it. And they said, well, it's going to be 8 to 10 weeks before we can, send it back to you fully repaired and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, wow. I walked over with a book just for the sake of it. And I dropped the book on the floor right beside the e-reader to see what would happen. And nothing happened. And then I realized I get it, that the book actually, there was a certain, and there's something about carrying around like my dog-eared copy of Catcher in the Rye in my back pocket. It's got an elastic around it. Actually, I think it's my daughter's hair elastic that's around it at the moment. There's something about the physicality of a book that, it's just not replaceable. I understand the convenience of the e-reader, of Kobe and stuff like that, and I have used them, especially when you're flying or traveling or whatever. It's a lot easier to carry that around than, 10 books in your bag or whatever.
I do have a funny story about the Kobe reader, though. I was just in Winnipeg. And when I was flying back from Winnipeg, there were two women who were sitting in the row across from me. And one woman was reading a paper book, and one woman was reading on her Kobo reader. And the flight attendant, as we were taxiing, the flight attendant came up and pointed to the woman with the paper book, and she said, "You can keep reading."
Yeah.
And then she turned to the woman with a Kobo and said, "But you, dear, have to turn off your book."
Oh, that's hilarious. That's brilliant.
So it was a priceless sort of moment.
There you go.
Can but you? I had a little bit of moment, like a little Canuck pride, though.
Yeah.
Seeing Kobo homegrown and all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's true. That is
see,
true.
See, for me, I like the idea of the, enhanced reading experience. We were talking about Pillars of the Earth yesterday, and you downloaded it because it's got you're reading along, and then you can look at a scene from the movie,
right?
Or the made-for-TV movie, right. Or you can look at the costumes and things like that while you're reading the book. It's just it elevates it to another level.
It does.
They've done it with a lot of kids' books too, where you can. I think Alice in Wonderland was one where you can move your your iPad back and forth, and then characters move across the screen.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. At what point, though, do we lose our capacity for reading or critical reading and therefore critical thinking? You know, that's my concern. We live in a surf and scan culture today. Mm-hmm. I think about my 14-year-old son. I call him the screenager because simultaneously he'll have his MacBook, his iPod, his iPhone, and the Xbox going at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, for him, the experience is, here's a, you know, go to cbc.ca or whatnot. He'll see the picture, right? There'll be maybe a quarter paragraph of text underneath, and then if you want to read more, you click here. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, he doesn't even bother to click.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, he doesn't want to know. He just needs to know, give me that rate. I just need to know the immediacy of it.
Yeah.
Is that affecting our capacity to read? Is that affecting our capacity to think?
Well, I'm a big fan of, trying stuff out, you know, to see what we can do. So I think I'm still in a phase right now where I really like the notion of sort of enhanced books. But I think it has to be a really organic fit. I think it has to be something where it makes sense. And no one, especially an author, wants to hear that it's not necessary that we do anything more with your book. Mm-hmm. And we can't afford to go back. Like, what are we going to do? Reinvent, you know, every book, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, who was I talking to? I think it was Lynn Henry, publisher. And she says at M&S now, and was a publisher at House of Anansi. And she was somewhere, I think, out in Vancouver sitting on a panel. And there was quite a rabid discussion about just the enjoyment of staying in the story.
Right.
And that, you know, there are a lot of people who are really concerned that we're losing our ability to be able to just stay in long form.
Right.
And Nick Beauchart, who's one of our other associates, introduced me to, is it longform.org?
Right.
These guys who are working with, like, the Instapaper reading experience. And really trying to get back into more of these sort of, like, New Yorker-esque length
essays. That's right. It's like the slow blogger movement.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we have to, I don't know. I think some begs probably, books beg to be reinvented in this way.
Yes.
But I don't know. What would you say is, like, if you could think of a book, do you have a favorite book of your own? If you could see it enhanced and what it would look like.
Wow.
Like, there are publishers like Harlequin,
well,
you know, who I think maybe, you know, a lot of readers don't know, have been playing this sort of stuff for
totally.
Quite some time.
Yes.
You know?
But I think, like, one of those Margaret Atwood books, like Year of the Flood, because she did music composition with some of the poetry that's in the book.
Right. Yeah.
I think that would be a very natural fit.
Well, a couple of years ago, Carlos Ruiz Zafón from Spain released a book that I read. I can't recall the title offhand, but he had composed all of the music for each chapter, which you could actually listen to on whatever, a CD or MP3 player or whatnot, as you were reading the book. It was all quiet, and it did enhance the experience. I'm waiting for the day, and we've started this, of course, with our arts magazine here in Atlantic Canada, where, you know, it comes to you as a PDF, but within the PDF, you have multimedia experiences, i.e. you have sort of a YouTube-esque channel that, you know, you can read the story on the Flamenco Festival, but you can also watch a clip, or you can listen to an interview with Maria Asunde, the founder of the festival.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how long until we get to that place with books? I know Ken Follett, we mentioned, it's already there to some degree, but to the point where it becomes, de rigueur or just a regular thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long until that happens? Are we there yet, or are we still just a couple years away?
I think we're still testing the waters.
I think probably the ideal thing would be to not try and reinvent a book for the same audience, but just, you know, try and find the books where we know we would tap into a completely different audience.
Right. Interesting.
So this might not be the best example, but top of mind is Eric Sibelin, who's a finalist for nonfiction, Governor General's Literary Award, for his book, The Cello Suites. You know, and that book's divided in thirds. There's some history. The composer, there's, sort of his travels and, you know, and he decided that he must know what it feels like to play the cello suite. So he, you know, picked up the cello. Like right there, I think there could be a travel guide in there. There could be, supportive materials. And then, like, you know, certainly it'd be hard to, well, you probably wouldn't be able to get the recordings, but, you know, he was quite successful at touring with a cellist. Mm-hmm. This was when I was at Anansi, and I was his publicist for a time, and we would pair him with the cellist at most of his appearances.
Wow.
I think there's a way that you could probably take that experience, and it would be very personal.
Yeah.
And, you know, accompanied by even some, him recording his own, narration. That's the sort of thing that I think, you could probably tap into a whole new market with that.
That's true.
Yeah. It's sort of like having those video commentaries on movies, you could add that extra layer of what it was like to write the book, mm-hmm. What the experience was, and then, add on top of that, new things like new readings or, mm-hmm. We're talking about QR codes and things like that. Like, that's just another way of tapping into technology.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to bring we're going to do a little music here and take a break, but this brings us to a point I want to get into after the break, and that's, authors needing to use these new tools at their disposal to promote themselves, because it seems to me, and I might be wrong, and we'll talk about this after the break, is that the publicists have been, and the publicity companies and the publishers have been dropping the ball a little bit with regards to promoting their authors, mostly because they can.
Oh. Glove has been dropped.
Okay, folks, stick around. Stephen Clare here with Kimberly Walsh and Julie Wilson. And then send this one out to Sophia this afternoon. Sophia. Stick around.
You could be happy, and I won't know. But you weren't happy the day I watched you go. And all the things that I wish I had not said. Played in lips till it's madness in my head. Is it too late to remind you how we were? And not our last days of silent screaming blur. Most of what I remember makes me sure I should have stopped you from walking out the door. You could be happy, I hope you are. You made me happier than I'd been by far. Somehow everything I own smells of you. And for the tiniest moment, it's all not true. Do the things that you always wanted to. Without me there to hold you back, don't think, just do. More than anything, I want to see you go. Take a glorious bite out of the whole world.
Snow Patrol with You Could Be Happy here on the book club, CKDU.ca, and a song for the lovely, the precious Sophia that we were just talking about here. Julie, I wanted to ask you, you're from Toronto.
I am. I was raised in the Niagara region, and then I moved to Toronto.
Okay. Whereabouts in the Niagara region?
St. Catharines.
Okay. Yeah. The Bernardo years.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Were you there during the Bernardo years?
Oh, very much.
You were?
Very much.
Did you see the house and when they yellow taped it? And they've taken it down.
It was in Port Dalhousie, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, no, that really was something. I'm working on on a novel, and you just, wow, I'd completely forgotten this. That whole thing, the vibe of that whole time kind of permeates part of the book. Right. It was very, very strange time to grow up, and I would have been in high school. So a couple years older probably than the victims, but still a very strange set of circumstances to sort of like come of age as sort of like a self-conscious, you know, sexualized girl. Mm. You know, it was a really, really strange time.
This was all over the news, of course.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, like, your neighbors, like, if they drove a van, you're like, that's the guy. But the strangest thing was, you know, as they were trying to sort of like, you know, piece everything together, was how, you know, one girl was treated differently than the other.
Right.
One was like, you know, the good girl. One was the one who got locked out. And it was just it was a very, very strange, strange time.
Yeah, well, what's the book that you're writing? Tell us about that.
Well, I don't know exactly what it's going to be. I mean, now it's set against the backdrop of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't feature. It's just sort of in the background.
You know what the last words were spoken on the Space Shuttle?
No.
What's this button for?
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay.
You know what? I actually reconnected through the miracles of social media with a friend who is a post-production coordinator. And over the years, has become like a real geek for NASA and the space program. And we had a meeting last week, and we're going to start meeting on a regular basis. She's given me some fantastic tidbits. I don't know if I can swing it or not, but in April I might try and get out to Cape Canaveral.
Cool.
To see one of the launches. Apparently one of the last. I think they're wrapping up the program.
Left. Two or three left?
Two, I think.
Two?
Yeah. Which is, I think one might be happening-ish now sometime. I don't know if you would say that regret is the theme of the book, but it's just some characters on three different waterfront communities, and I don't know. It was just 9/11 transported me back to the space shuttle, and I started asking people questions and about sort of the major media events that have shaped their lives.
Right.
And the Challenger was a big, big, big one. So I think I'm just going to kind of work backwards. And, you know, the only thing I know right now is that I think it actually ends before the disaster. So the readers will know what, you know, what happened next.
And that's, you know, it's an important part. And I know, Kim, we talked about this before, that one of the hallmarks of good writing or great writing is what is left out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Often. Yeah.
And that might be a real example of that.
I'm fascinated by the way that the world every once in a while literally sends something up, like, you know, well above our sight line. Actually, Colin McCann's Let the Great World Spin was one of my favorite books. And that high wire, that tightrope walk between, is it the World Trade Centers?
Yes.
And if you haven't read it, it's a series of sort of profiles of a bunch of different people, New Yorkers, and, you know, sort of like life from down here. But at some point, they all reference something that's happening up there. It's like, is it happening? What is it? Mm-hmm. They see it as something different. Some see it as a miracle. Some see it as a tragedy. Some people don't actually see it for what it is, you know. So that's sort of like the vibe that I'm thinking of, you know, that every once in a while, I don't want it to be one of those things where it's like, you know, you